Today I'm going to talk about the first time I got cut. I guess we need to start at kind of the beginning of all that. And I remember in college, my senior year, I had an ankle injury, which kind of kept me out of a lot of playing. And so I felt like I should have been a first round draft pick. But, you know, everybody feels like they should be a first round draft pick. But I really truly felt like that ankle injury kind of like kept me out of playing for most of the season. It was a high ankle sprain, nothing that was serious or anything like that. But then when I got drafted, I went to the Chicago Bears. And I remember being like, I'm here. Like, yeah. I made it. And all the craziness that goes along with it, for lack of a better word, all the money, all the fame, everywhere you go, people know your name and people want to be a part of you and they want to be in what you're doing. They want to be at your table. They want to be in your environment. They just want to be in that circle. It was probably a bit too much. Yeah. You know, when I got there, it was just like.
And this is your first NFL experience.
This is the very first NFL experience.
So you're getting everything.
Right, right. And you're in a big city like Chicago. You have all the history of the Chicago Bears. You know, oh my God, you're a Chicago Bear.
Big history on that team.
Yeah, huge history. So when I got there and I'm in training camp and I'm playing, it was almost immediate, like, you're going to be a starter. I was a second round draft pick. I was, I think, like 48th pick in the second round. So, you know, that's pretty high because you have 31, 32 teams. So being picked in the second round at 49th pick was really good.
It's a big deal.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you just talk about like Brock Purdy, Mr. Irrelevant going last, yeah. And he made it to the Super Bowl.
Exactly.
First and second, there's like high expectations for those
huge
guys.
Expectations. And even you start to, you feel it because you're like, I just got all this money. You just went from this broke college kid to all of a sudden you got $1 million in the bank. And it's just like overwhelming. So you feel like you got to take care of everybody. You got to take care of mom. You got to get her something nice. You got to take care of her house. You got to do all these things. So when I got to Chicago, I already kind of had the big head without even knowing it. Like, I had an ego and hadn't even realized it yet. So when I got there, all of a sudden, I'm starting. Like, I'm from day one. I'm on the field. Here you go. Get on the field. And I just let things kind of slip. I wasn't focused like I should have been. I was showing up to meetings late. And not intentionally. Like, the first time I was late for a meeting, and it freaked me out. I went out the night before, which, once again, you know, here's that party, all the bad stuff you hear about the NFL.
And you in Chicago, too?
Yeah, yeah. It was a huge
city of championships, so.
Yeah, it's so much going on. And I'm, like, out partying. And I remember showing up late. Like, I woke up, and I realized, like, oh, my God, I'm late. So instant, my heart is pounding through my chest. And all I'm saying to myself is, okay, calm down. Make sure you got everything. Make sure you don't leave anything behind. Because at this point, I had already missed the walkthrough, which is kind of just the last preparation before you leave on Saturday to go to a game. Or depending on how far you go, you may leave on Friday. But most times you leave Saturday to go to the hotel. So I'm like, oh, my God, I cannot forget anything. I got to make sure I got everything. So I get there, and coach just kind of looked at me like, what happened? I overslept. It's going to be expensive. That's all he said to me.
Dang.
He was like, it's going to be expensive. And I'm like,
what did that mean to you when he said that?
That meant he was going, that was a fine. He was going to dig deep in my pocket. I think that was like, missing a meeting was like 10 grand. Missing practice was another 10,000.
Sometimes you hear these fines, right? And to like a regular person, it sounds massive. Did the 10,000 sound big to you? Or was
yes.
That like, okay.
Absolutely.
You still saw that as 10,000. Yeah. Okay. Because sometimes these players, they catch fines and it's like, it feels like it's nothing to them.
When you're making millions like that, yeah. When you're getting 20 million a week, or excuse me, 20 million a week, 20 million a year, yeah, 10,000 is not a big deal. Right. But when you're a second round draft pick, your money's not like that. That 10,000, well, it was actually more than that. It was probably closer to like 20 just because I missed meetings, so that's a fine. Then I missed practice, that's another fine. So you're talking about combining two separate fines together. So it was close to $20,000.
And what game was this? Was this the first game of the season?
No, I want to say this was the we were going to play Green Bay in Green Bay.
So it's a division game.
So it's a division game, a big rival. So coaches are looking at that as, you're not mentally prepared. You're not focused on what you need to be focused on. So I was just leaving this trail of breadcrumbs throughout my first season, just kind of like, he's young, immature, he's not ready to be here, which wasn't the case. It was just like, it was so overwhelming. Yeah. And to not really have any kind of guidance or anyone to be there to say, hey, man, you know what? here's what you need to do. Having a mentor or a big brother per se, it just, I feel like that was a disadvantage because I didn't have anybody like my son has me to say, hey, this is the right way to approach things. This is the wrong way. So I went in thinking, you're in the NFL. You've made it. Like, what else do you need to do? You're here. And I didn't realize this was just the beginning of a new trip, a new adventure in my life. And I started it out terribly. So who are the
senior members of that team when you got there to Chicago? Because I think about being a Ravens fan, right? Uh-huh. And I know Ray Lewis kind of stepped into that mentor role and is like a big deal for the Ravens team, even now as they went into the playoffs now. Mm-hmm. You know, Ray Lewis being there is like a big mentor. Yeah. Did you have that kind of figure on the Chicago Bears?
We had older vets. I had Clyde Simmons, who was an older guy who came from Philadelphia. I had Curtis Conway was a wide receiver. Curtis Enos was there. But as far as that, like, real vocal leader, somebody that would get in your face and be like, hey, Rook, you know, you're messing up and you need to get your straight because you're not going to be in this league long. I didn't feel like at that time there was anybody there. But also I didn't reach out to anybody because I thought I had it all figured out. I thought I knew what was going on. I'm starting. I played 11 games. I started 8. And so the last 3 or so, I was kind of coming off the bench. I was a backup at that point because now, you know, you're messing up off the field. You're not really producing like we thought you would on the field. So you're not getting it. And once the starting job was taken away from me, which is actually funny because Van Tuene, was a defensive lineman that came in to actually take my position. And being arrogant, being dumb, whatever you want to call it, it didn't click in my mind that they're bringing in a defensive end because you're not getting it done. And we actually ended up being really good friends. I mean, it was just amazing because at this time, my wife was just still my girlfriend/fiance. So, you know, she's friends with his wife. So we're actually friends and it's not a big deal. And looking back on it, I'm like, wow, this guy was brought in to take your job, and you didn't even realize it.
So he came; he wasn't on the team. They brought him in.
They brought him in.
And it didn't raise no red flags for you or nothing.
It didn't raise not one red flag that this guy was here to take my position. And so as the season went on, he would sub in more, and I'm kind of like, like I noticed it, but it still hadn't clicked that – hey, bro, you're on your way out.
You sitting there like, it's nice to have an extra dude on the line.
It's nice.
This is real nice, actually.
It is nice to have some help. So about week 8, week 9, all of a sudden they're like, hey, Van, you're going to start. Russell, you're coming off the bench.
What was that like? When that moment hit, was it like in front of the team? Was it behind closed doors?
No, it was behind closed doors, but in the meeting room, you have like your big team meeting, which is the entire team.
Yeah.
Then you have your breakout meetings, which your offense and defense go to their individual meetings. You talk to the offensive and defensive coordinators. And then from there, you break out to your defensive linemen, your linebackers and DB. So we were in our defensive line room when he had made the announcement, but it wasn't a shock to anybody except for me.
Okay, you're in a room with the rest of the dudes, and they make that announcement that you're not starting anymore.
Yeah.
What was that feeling like in that room? Did you, like, feel embarrassed?
Felt like shit.
Yeah, you didn't even want to talk to anyone,
I was embarrassed. I was humbled.
Jeez.
I was pissed. But I wasn't pissed with Russell. I was pissed with everybody else.
So like, went to everyone else.
Yeah, it was the coach's fault. It was Van's fault. It was everybody else in that room except for me.
What was the rest of that day like for you? And when did that start? Was that the beginning of the day? And you just had to feel this knot in your stomach for the rest of the day. Like, how did you come to work?
For the rest of my career.
Really? That feeling followed you forever.
Oh, yeah. That's what drove me.
Well,
that's...
so go through the rest of that day. Like, when did you tell your fiance? Did you tell the family? What did you do to even cope with that?
I remember when I got the call, or not the call, but when I was told in the meeting, and I just was kind of like, oh, wow. Like, it was just this, like, I felt like everything around me just went quiet.
Yeah.
And like this sinking feeling came over me of like, do you suck? And then now here comes all the self-doubt. And so, you know, you go to practice and now all of a sudden you have this fire you should have had in the beginning. Now you're trying to go hard. Now you're trying to prove you belong.
It's a desperation.
It's a desperation act. And looking back on it, it was the beginning of me being cut. And I didn't know it because, once again, I'd never been through this. I'd never seen it before. I didn't know anyone who had been through it. So this was all brand new to me. This was like a ton of bricks being dumped on me. And I'm like, what the hell do I do with this? Right. And how do I handle it? So I remember going home. And at this point in time, my girlfriend, which is my wife now from college, was, you know, fiance. And she's out here. And it's like, yo, you know, I'm not going to be starting. And she was just like, well, what does that mean?
Right.
And I'm like, well, I'm not starting. And, you know, I'm going to be coming off the bench. Well, that coming off the bench went to being, okay, now a couple games later, we're not even going to dress you, which in the NFL, when you don't dress, there's a bunch of reasons why you may not dress.
It could be part of the game plan.
It's part of the game plan. Or you just, like in my case, they didn't believe in me anymore. Man. And they had lost faith in me. And being such a high draft pick, it was just like, dude, we expected so much more out of you. We expect you to be a starter. You know, I had Richard Dent's number. So it was just like all these things that I didn't know around me that were going on around me. It was just like, oh my God, my world's coming to an end. And yeah. I remember that offseason, the whole offseason, I remember being in like a mode of like desperation.
Yeah.
That fun that I'd had when I first came in the NFL was gone.
Okay.
I was scared. I didn't know what was going on. I didn't know what was going to happen. And, you know, I just got married now at this point. So now I have a wife. She's living with me. So now the reality of the real world is on me. Like, you have someone who depends on you. You know, you have to take care of her. Like, what's going to happen? So going into training camp, going into my second year, which was when they drafted Brian Urlacher. So I actually spent a preseason with him. And I remember just going through that preseason, I was a backup. And I was just in this desperation mode, just trying to bust my butt every day to prove that I belong. Like, that same fire that I should have had in the very beginning, I now had it. Like, my job could be taken away from me. I got to get it back. I got to earn it back. And I remember going through all of training camp, and I remember one of our, like, quality control guys. I can't remember his name, but he just kind of was talking to me. He goes, hey, man, you know, you need to have a good game.
So you had at least – did you have anybody else in your court just kind of helping you to navigate that? Or you just, like, by yourself?
I was by myself. I mean, I say by myself. I was by myself from the standpoint of – the football knowledge of it.
Mentally.
Yeah. My wife didn't really understand it because it was all new for her. It was just all new for everybody. At least for us, it was.
And also, how was the replacement's impact on the season? Like, what did that look like for the rest of the season once he got in there and you lost it to him?
Well, looking at it now, 48 years old, almost 49, I can look back on it and say, you know what? They made the right decision because he went in there and he had a hell of a year.
Really?
He balled out. Looking at it, do I think he was better than me? No, but...
And you mean, like, physically, like, talent, IQ? What do you mean by better?
I mean, for you? Just better than me. For me, it was just like, is he a better player than me? Is he a better athlete than me? You know, I was... Once again, I'm still in this self-doubt mode. Yeah. Like, it's everybody else's fault but mine. Like, I'm better than him. I know the game better. But obviously, I didn't because he took my job.
Right.
I was never able to get it back. And then the following offseason, they were kind of like, you know what, Russell? Bring us your playbook, which... In layman's terms, means you're fired.
It's like turning your badge and gun.
Turning your badge and your gun. Yeah, let me see your key card. Bring me your key card.
You were like, but I read these plays.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I remember. I just remember that.
I put stickers in there.
Mm-hmm. And I was just like, oh, okay. So, and that happens, and you come in, and you go in there, and there's a guy waiting for you.
Man.
And, you know, they actually have a security guy outside the door.
Just in case you flip out.
Just in case somebody flips out.
Big dudes these are getting angry.
You're
a big dude getting angry.
Yeah, but I was so, like, just my world was just torn down around me that I was like, oh, wow, I've been fired. And I remember coming back in the locker room, and you have to clean out your locker, and there's guys in the locker room.
Bro, I remember playing high school football, and I was not a good football player. But I remember when players got cut.
Yeah.
They were not nice about it. No. They were not nice. I remember in high school, one of the running backs got cut, and the next day he came in, there were Band-Aids all over his locker. because you just got cut.
Oh, wow.
Band-Aids all over you. They would put Band-Aids all over your locker. That I remember, Dundalk High School in Baltimore, Maryland, man. I remember that was the crustiest thing ever. I remember coming in there, and I barely deserved to be on the team. But I was like fourth string, so I was all right. I was never going to get in the game. But some of the star players get cut, and those Band-Aids would be on the locker. Was there any of that kind of like
No, it wasn't meanness? Because everybody had been through it.
Right.
At one point in time in your career, you're going to go through it. Whether it's because of talent, whether it's because of contract negotiations, it's going to happen. But I just remember cleaning out. It was like the walk of shame. Like, you got your head down. You don't really want to make eye contact with anybody. And guys are like, hey, man, it's going to be okay. You're going to get picked up by another team. And you're like, okay, I appreciate it. And you're walking out with this box, and you put it in your car. Jeez. And I remember going home, and I was on my way home. I called my wife, and I was like, I just got cut. And I remember I got home, and we went to the movies. And I can't remember what movie we saw. She was just like, let's just go out.
So what year was this? Maybe we can guess what movie.
It was 99. It
Matrix.
It wasn't the Matrix, because I saw the Matrix in high school. I remember seeing it in high school and being so damn confused, like, what is going on? But I wish I could remember the movie, but I just remember her being such a great support system for me, because she knew, I mean, like, I was devastated. Like, it was no hiding it. It was on my face and my body language. I wasn't enraged anymore. It was now, like, my dream is over. Like,
and that's how you felt, like it was done.
It was done.
You didn't think there was a path back with another team at that moment? Nope.
I didn't think anybody was going to pick me up. I was scared out of my mind. I mean, I try not to show it to my wife, but you know, she could tell. And so I remember we went to the movies, and she was like, it's going to be okay. And I talked to my agent, and he was like, hey, you know, you got to clear waivers, which basically is a 24-hour window where nobody can reach out to you. And then after everything is cleared with your team, it's official. And now if another team wants to, they're interested in you, they'll come and talk to you. And so I got a call. Well, I didn't get the call, but my agent got a call. And I remember the next day he called me, and he was like, hey, the Cardinals want to pick you up. And I just remember being like tears formed in my eyes, but I'm not an emotional person. So I kind of fought it back, because I'm like, I'm tough. I can't cry. But I just remember being so happy, like, oh, thank God. I thought my career was over.
So did you feel like you're not an emotional person, or do you feel like you didn't have the space to show emotion?
Okay, well, see, now we're going to get into a different subject, because
that little gap right there, that's a big moment.
I am not the type of person who feels like, I don't share emotions. I'm not an emotional person. I keep a lot to myself. You know, I'm one of those people who feel like nobody really cares, man. Like, you just have to learn to deal with it.
Yeah.
And that's the way I've gotten better over the years with being married and having kids. You have to learn to show that affection. But at that point in time in my life, I was not going to be like, oh my God.
Yeah. How old were you then?
Oh gosh. Fresh out of college. So like 21, absolutely. 22. Yeah.
Early 20s. You feel like you have to be the breadwinner. You have to go out. You not only have to be tough, you have to be resilient.
Right. Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
I feel like you might've thought, I can't even show this right now because we're in crisis.
No, absolutely not.
And you're probably looking at your fiance, like, she's looking at me to figure this out.
Right. Exactly. Like, I have to figure this out. She depends on me. I'm supposed to take care of everything. So when my agent got that phone call, and then I got the phone call, my wife was like, see, I told you everything would be okay. And I'm like, yeah, okay, cool. And I remember when I got to Arizona, like, all I could think about is, I'm never going to let that happen to me again.
Really?
I'm never going to leave my destiny up to somebody else to allow another person to say, you're not good enough for this.
That was a canon event for
you. Oh, my God, it was. And I remember it was funny, because when I flew here, my wife was still in Chicago, and they flew me out literally like that next day. And so I'm out here for a couple of weeks by myself. I'm in an extended stay. And I remember one of the first things that I realized when I got to Arizona, I landed. I didn't know anything about Arizona. I just knew it was the desert.
It's been a shock to you.
Huh? Oh my God, it was coming from Chicago to Arizona.
You just see the brown from the plane.
You just see brown and dirt and cactus. And I'm like, I get off the plane, and the first thing I thought when I walked down that jetway was like, holy shit, it's hot. Like, oh my God, I thought it was the air coming off the jet engine. Like, okay.
When did you fly? Was it the summer?
Yeah, I came here in the summertime. Goodness. Yeah, so it's 100 plus, and I just remember getting off the plane like, oh my God, is that the jet engine? And I walk, because you come inside a building, now it's cool, go downstairs, you grab your luggage, and there's somebody waiting there to pick you up. Mm-hmm. I walk outside, and I'm like, oh my God, that's not a jet engine, this is Arizona. And that was like the first thing that I had to adjust to was the heat. Because my first day practicing, I'm out there and I'm going hard. Right. Because now I've got this in the back of my, I got this bug up my butt. And I'm like, I'm not going to let this happen. And nobody's going to take this away from me again. Right. I'm going to be a starter. And I was just pushing myself at practice. And I remember seeing, like, what is it when you're out in the desert? The Mirage. I started seeing stuff and I'm like, what's going on? Like, am I hallucinating? And it was just the heat. And I had to get acclimated to that. But the same kind of process that happened to me in Chicago is kind of what I did when I got to Arizona. I was a defensive tackle, and they had picked up my contract, and I was a backup. And so when I got here, you know, you get this big, thick playbook. Like, I'm not joking. It's like that thick. And it's got everything from A to Z that you need to know about the defense.
Now, was the defense any different than Chicago? Because Chicago, I know, has a reputation of being a legendary defense. I know the 85 Bears is a big thing.
That's a big time players, right. Not necessarily the calls.
So you didn't feel, did you feel like it was different defensively going from Chicago to Cardinals?
It was a
different style or anything?
It was very much a 4-3, which is four down linemen and three linebackers. A lot of times it just comes down to terminology.
Okay.
You know, you may call it, you know, a wing, he may call it something different, but it's just learning.
The roles are the same.
Yeah, okay. Exactly. What you're supposed to do is still the same. It just, you have to learn the terminology. And that was the hardest part, was learning the terminology. And I remember it took a couple of games, and finally, you know, I was able to get in. They were like, hey, all right, we're going to activate you. You know, I dressed and I was coming off the bench. And I just remember that feeling of what it was like to be a starter. And I missed that. I hungered for that again. And I remember leaving there when I left Chicago. I'm going to go back a little bit. When I left Chicago, I left there with this, I'm going to prove Dick Geron that he made a mistake. Like, that was the head coach at the time of the Bears. And I just was like, I was so angry with the organization. I was so angry at everybody else except for Russell. And so when I got to the Cardinals, I used that as motivation. And I remember the guy in front of me was named Mark, and I'm going to forget his last name, but, you know, he was a defensive tackle in front of me. And after about three games, the same thing that happened to me in Chicago happened here. So I went from being the backup, being the new guy brought in, busting my butt, to all of a sudden I'm getting more and more playing time, more and more playing time. And then all of a sudden I'm going out to practice one day, and I remember Simeon Rice, who one of the biggest inspirations for who my son is today, like who he is and what he did at back then. I always knew, I said, when I have a son, I want my son to play like that. I want him to rush the passer like that.
I remember Simeon Rice.
Yeah. And I remember him telling me, like, hey, you're going to start. And I'm like, dude, shut up. Like, you know, like, you're a player. What do you know? Like, you know, come on. Like, I didn't understand what star players had and what their, how the weight they carried. So I was just like, okay, dude, whatever. I mean, I'm the kind of person that I would rather you invite me in instead of me just assuming I belong. So I don't like to be embarrassed. Like, that's one of my pet peeves. Like, I don't ever want to go in somewhere and they'd be like, oh, what are you doing here? Like, I hate to be embarrassed. Yeah. So I was just kind of like in the background. And all of a sudden, I remember Mean Joe Green being like, hey, Russell, get out here. And it was with the starting team. And I just remember looking at Mark, and it was like this look of like, man, I'm sorry, but it is what it is. And
yeah, because you're looking at him. Are you thinking like, he's probably got the same anger right now that I had?
Yeah, I've been there. I know how you feel. But it sucks, but that's just the way it goes.
The game is the game.
Yeah. You know, you can't hate the player. You know, don't hate the game.
Coaches, man.
Yeah. But,
that's what I did.
But it's not the coach. That's what I did, and it didn't work.
It didn't work.
And so when I got out there and I was starting, it was like, man, I'm starting. And I refused to let anybody take that from me ever again. And so I was here for like 6 years, and I started like all 6 years. So looking back on that was like the beginning – of Russell becoming a professional football player.
So you feel like that was your real first season?
That was my real first season, because that my first drafted season would have been like being in college, where you get redshirted and you get that year to figure it out and to learn. And I was literally had that college mind frame of, oh, it's my first year, I'll have time to figure it out, I can party, I can hang out. The same stupid stuff that I did as a freshman in college was the same stupid stuff that I carried into my first year to pros. Yeah. But now it's like, nah, buddy, there's no, you know, we can't wait for you. Like, you're a high draft pick. We expect you to play and play at a high level. You're not producing. Bye.
Wow.
And I remember being with the Cardinals, and probably about 5 years, 6 years of being here, we played in Buffalo. And Dick Geron was either the head coach or he was a coach on the staff. I can't remember exactly what he was. And so I remember being in Buffalo, and I knew we were playing Dick Geron. And all this anger and frustration and I almost want to say hatred, because I felt like he hated me, so I hated you back because you cut me. When I was able to play and play in front of him and show him I'm a good player, like I can do this. And I remember going up to him after the game, like I found him, to be like, how you doing? And he was like, good job, Russell. I'm glad you finally got it together. So for me, it was like carrying all this anger and this frustration. It was like, dude, nobody cares, man.
That's such a big moment, because when you're like, when you're in the thick of that, like vengeance.
Yes.
When you feel like you've got to prove something wrong, and then you realize that they don't even think about this moment that has affected you so deeply.
Yes.
What do you even do? Where do you go after that?
My bubble was bust, because I felt like I wanted him to be like, oh man, we made a mistake. Right. We should have like listened. We should have kept you longer.
They don't even care.
They don't care. They're like, he literally, it wasn't like dirty or dry. It was just very much like, hey man, I'm glad you found your way. I'm glad you got it done, because there were high expectations for you. There was no like, I'm sorry, please forgive me. It was like, okay.
And even furthermore, they probably didn't even think that something wrong happened. They probably thought this was business as usual. He understands this business.
Yeah.
There's no reason for me to even need to go apologize to him. He should understand what happened.
Yeah.
And you're like, these dudes have nearly ruined my life.
Yeah. And see, and just like what you said, these guys, but it was me.
It wasn't.
And now I can look back on that and I feel like that was so great for me, because it helped me become a better pro. It helped me understand what it means to be a professional. And like a lot of these young men coming out of college don't really understand what it means to be a pro. Like, this is your job 24/7. Like, it's every, you live, eat, breathe football, you know, studying the film, lifting weights, training, your diet, how you live at home, balancing home life. Like, all this is football. And I didn't get that my rookie year. I thought it was about hanging out, partying, being in the club. Where's the next scene to be on? You know, this is Chicago. You can go out every single night and there's always something to do. And so coming to Arizona, it was just like going from this fast lane.
Chicago.
Yeah, and it's like all the way over here in the slow lane, you know? And it was like, wow. So it helped me develop, I feel, as a player, and it gave me the longevity that I had. You know, I played for 9 years. And which
is a long time.
That's a very long time. Yeah.
That's a lot of pain to the body.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of these dudes get banged up and they leave in 5.
Yeah, they
do. So 9 is amazing.
It was.
Coming out of that situation, like, did you have a different, like, level of empathy for rookies?
I
because did. You didn't have that guidance your rookie year. When you saw a rookie come in and start to make those same mistakes, did you feel like you should say something? Or did you feel like, hey, sometimes these lessons are hard learned?
No. I 100% felt like I would take people under my wing. Wendell Bryant, who I've had on him, he was a first round draft pick that came in with the Cardinals. And, you know, there were things that I saw with him early that I took him under my wing and tried to help him. And it doesn't always work out the way you want it to. But like you said, because I had went through and I know how it had devastated me and how I felt and how it impacted my life, I didn't want to see another young player go through that. Right. So Wendell was one that really pops out at me, because he's still like my younger brother to this day.
Right.
You know, we still stay in touch. We hang out a lot. I had him on the show. He has always been somebody that I've looked at as like my little brother, and I've always wanted to help him. And I think I took that wherever I went, because I'm the type of person where I don't want to see people wrong. I don't care who you are, what you believe, what you think. At the end of the day, I don't feel like a human being should be treated less than a human being.
Right.
And so I have a lot of empathy. You know, I'm kind of a softy. You know, my wife's always just like, you know, you got this big exterior of a grizzly bear, but you're a big teddy bear in the inside. Because I do, like, when I see things, I don't, if I know it's wrong, I'm like,
it's like, who else is going to say something?
Who else is going to say something? So yeah. I really reached out to him. There were a couple other guys just throughout my career that anytime I could help somebody, I would try to help them, but I never forced it. If I gave them advice and, you know, I felt like they looking at me like, dude, what are you talking about? Like, I don't need your help.
Right.
Okay, well, I tried. But if they're like, for real? Because as a rookie, when you come in the league, you feel like everybody's against you.
Really?
You know, the higher you are as a draft pick, the more pressure you feel, the more you know that you're coming in to take somebody's job. And that's how players look at it, okay? You look at the roster. I remember every year that I was with the Cardinals, you know, I'm starting, I would look at who they're drafting. I would always look at who they're drafting. Okay, a defensive tackle.
Was that like a good look? Was it like, was it a fear-based look?
It was a fear-based for me. It was fear for me because I had lost my job before to somebody.
Every year you got this fear that the new drafts could replace you.
Every year.
How is that affecting you mentally on the field every season?
I think it pushed me.
It pushes you harder?
It pushes me to make sure that kid doesn't take my job. So it's as stressful as that is, it's like, you know what? I gotta work harder.
Yeah.
Okay, so this kid is 21 years old. I'm now 25. Okay, that doesn't seem like a big deal, but he's younger, less miles. Like, all these things go through your head, so you look at it, and when they drafted Wendell Bryant, he's a first-round draft pick. There's only two defensive tackles. One of us is gonna go. Like, that's how I looked at it. Like, I knew, even with him coming in, I helped him, but in the back of my mind, I know he's here to take somebody's job eventually.
Like, so there's never, like, in the thick of it, I know you and Wendell are, like, cool now,
yeah.
But in the thick of it, there's never a true, like, I'm here to help you, because there's always, like, a, you could replace me, you could end my career. Is that what's going on or no?
With Wendell, it was different. I think from the very beginning, we kind of clicked as friends, and I wanted to see him do well, you know, being a first-round draft pick, and, you know, I know how it was for me being a high draft pick. You know, I wanted to see him do well. I think I helped him. I think that I was coming from a genuine place.
Right.
But I have seen people who will help you, but only to a degree.
Right.
I'm not going to give you enough information to surpass me.
Hmm.
And so you have to find that. And that's why, you know, they say NFL stands for not for long. Because
never heard that.
You
before.
Never, yeah. You know, that's
but very, it makes sense.
That's very common amongst football players. Like, they'll say the NFL stands for not for long. And it's every year they bring in somebody to take your job.
Wow.
Every single year. That's how I approached it. I think that's how a lot of guys approach it, where they're like, you know what? This is the NFL. Every year they have fresh talent coming out every single year. You see these guys in college, these top draft picks coming out. They are brought in to take somebody's job.
Does it become really stressful at a certain year? Like, maybe year 4 or 5, you're like, do you start to go, I got a year left, or maybe I got 2 left?
You know what? It's literally you're living day to day, like year to year. You know, you get there, and it's like, I have this year to prove that I belong here for next year. And until you get that big contract that kind of gives you a little bit of room of, oh, I feel better now.
Right.
Like, you get that 4-year contract worth $80 million. Now, you removed yourself from the commoners. Like, you're up here now.
Yeah, you got a big deal.
You got literally a big deal.
And it's almost like a gig economy a little bit. You guys are adjacent to a gig economy. Each new gig pushes you a little bit more forward.
Mm-hmm.
And you're hoping to get a big gig
that
lasts way longer so you can just breathe for a second.
I
didn't know that was the vibe of NFL players.
Yeah, absolutely
it is. I thought once you got the NFL, it's like, I'm set. The next 5 years, good.
No.
It could be over in a
year.
That's
what I thought. That's what got me cut.
That's
what got me cut, because I believe that. I signed this 4-year deal coming out of college. You know, it was like 4 years, $3 or $4 million. So I'm like, never seen these numbers before. I've never heard my name and millions mentioned.
And there's
together.
No guarantee there, right?
Only thing you get guaranteed is your signing bonus. That's why guys fight so hard and they hold out for as much as they can get up front.
On the front end.
On the front end because, you know, you could get hurt like that. Mm-hmm. They don't give out guaranteed contracts. I mean, well, they're starting to do it now. So obviously I'm talking from a little bit ancient times, but you know, the contracts weren't guaranteed like they are now. So guys really wanted that upfront money. And when you can get that, that really does give you that breathing room because you get $30 million guaranteed, you get $50 million guaranteed. That gives you a little bit of room of, okay, I know I'm gonna be here for 3 or 4 years. You know, I can buy a home. Right. I can start to have my family settle down because for me, you know, coming from Chicago, I just got married and now I'm here in Arizona. You know, my wife is just like, hey, you know, I want kids. And me, I'm thinking like, man, I don't even know if I'm how long we're going to be here. So it was like once I read up or I signed a new contract with Arizona, it was like there was that little bit of breathing room. Yeah. There was that little bit of like, okay, they like me. I'm gonna be here for a couple years. Now we can start a family. Now we can do these things. So it's a very stressful life. Like people don't really understand like how stressful it is. You see all this money and you see this fame, but there's just so much that goes along with that that people don't see.
I think a lot of people see some of the frustrations of NFL players and they think, oh, these are grown men mad that they didn't win a game, but they don't ever consider the fact that, hey, I may not have the longevity or financial foundation or really the life I thought I would have for myself if this game doesn't go right.
Right.
And some of those helmet pulls and throws on the grounds and those kicking the coolers down moments is like, I don't have any money now. Yeah. I may not have any money now.
Yes. That play could ruin my life.
That's
from
wild.
A financial standpoint, dropping that ball, missing that tackle. You know, if I'm wide open and you don't see me, like that frustration is that, hey, man, you not seeing me, you're making me miss out on bonuses. Mm-hmm. You're making me miss out on an opportunity to help us win, to show that I belong here.
My family, my community.
My family, you're messing with a lot of
promises I've made.
Yeah, a lot of promises and a lot of people depending on you. So it's just a lot of pressure out there. So like you said, when I watch football, I understand,
you
like,
understand
why a guy gets
than
pissed.
Anyone else. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like there's constantly an energy of desperation between players.
I believe so, yeah. I
and mean, do you see that sometimes in the locker room? Do you see, like, do some people reveal that crack in the mentality where they're just like, if I don't make this next game, I could not be here? Or,
oh, God,
or do you
yeah.
see the opposite side, too, where people just like, you only live once. I might get cut. I'm about to ball out. Let's spend this money.
And you know what? There are, I would say, for me, I've noticed that there's both sides to it. There's the guys that are like, that are just so uptight that I'm like, every play matters.
Right.
I got to make this happen. Then there are guys that's like, look, man, this is a blessing to be here. I'm just going to go out and have a great time. And you have just different ways of approaching it. Mine was, it became a desperation for me because when I got cut in Chicago, because I thought I had made it. And I'm like, oh, man, I'm just happy to be here. I'm very happy to be here. You know?
Coming to America.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And it was like, I was just so happy. And I'm like, yeah, let's have a great time. Let's have a great time. And that great time ended up being, I'm not going to say a downfall, but a turning point in my life where I was like, oh, wow, I could have lost it all. And so when I got that call from Arizona, it was like, okay, now you have a second opportunity. You have a chance to right your wrongs. And like I said, I had kept receipts. So when I saw Dick Geron, I was going to be like, see, and look what you missed out on. He was like, dude, it's just business, man. You can't take it personally. And so I have always taken it like that, and I approached the rest of my career like that. When I left Arizona and I went to Seattle, it was the same thing. When I got released from Seattle and went to New York, I had been through it before, so it wasn't as scary. You know, I knew I could play. I had confidence in myself. I had confidence in my ability that there are enough teams out there that I know I'm going to get picked up. So it going through that really hardened me and taught me the NFL and how the ugly side of the NFL, that it's not all glitz and glamour. Right. Like, it's a dirty underbelly.
Well, so that confidence coming out of, so you say you got cut on, was it cut or release? Is there a difference there?
Same thing.
Same thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So when you left Seattle and you go into New York, was that confidence on the same level as the confidence you had, say, your draft year or even the year you went to Arizona? Was there a different confidence level? And what was your mentality going into that? Was it like, I'm going to be a star player or a role player, or am I going to be a veteran that helps out the team as a whole?
When I spent 6 years here and I moved on to Seattle, I was getting, you're talking about seven, that's like year eight now. So now the body's feeling it. You start to feel that old age. Now I say old age, I'm in my 30s, but
it's like old dog football years.
Yeah, it's dog years. Going to Seattle, I knew going in that I was going to be a third defensive tackle, which is still really good. You know, you have a good rotation. Any really good team, they're going to have at least a three-man rotation when it comes to their D-line, maybe even four. So for me, that was good, but I remember just being in Seattle, and I could feel I had lost a step. You know, and it wasn't anything that I wasn't doing. It was just my body. It was the game. The players around me were getting younger, faster, better. And I just started to see the game like I was more of the intellectual side now. Like, okay, let me look at his stance to make sure I get an advantage. I'm more studying the film than what I did at a young age, because now I've been through it and I've seen it. I've had different mentors along the way, and I've taken a little bit of his, how he does things and how he does things, how I do things, and I've made it my own. So when I got to Seattle, it was more of, okay, I'm a role player now. You know, I'm not a starter anymore, but I'm still out there. I can still affect the game. And then when I got released, it wasn't a complete shock, because I could feel myself getting a little long in the tooth. I knew the plays that I used to be able to make 5 years ago were just a little bit out of my
grasp.
Was
it a game? Was it a practice? Was it a moment where you go, okay, this is the beginning of a new chapter where I'm not who I used to be?
I think when I left here, when I left Arizona to go to Seattle, and I knew they were recruiting me as a backup, as a role player. So I was like, okay, are you willing to accept that? And I didn't want to accept that. I was hoping that Arizona would make a push and kind of, because I'd been here, it was my comfort zone, and they knew me, I knew them, and they just didn't match what Seattle gave me to be a backup. So I'm like, well, I'm getting more money and less is asked of me, so why the hell not?
Was there a moment of reflection where, you talked about like that desperation, and every season could be the last season when you're going to Seattle. Was that your thought process? Like, I could be out of this team this season. Were you reflecting on what you were able to do with the Cardinals or your career as a whole at that moment?
When I got to Seattle, I knew like time was winding down.
Okay.
You know, I wasn't as fearful of it as I was when I first started, when I first got cut. So when I left Arizona, it was kind of like I left on my terms. It was like more money. I had a better opportunity to go to Seattle. And that was my first time being in the playoffs. So it was a great move for me, because now I'm on a team. You got Paul Allen, who has, Nike money. And it's just, we got a private jet. You know, anything you ask for, here you go. Here's all this stuff for your kids and all this paraphernalia. So it was a better move for me. I thought it was great. I didn't bring my family. I remember me and my wife.
What was your family like at this point? Because your wife was your fiance.
Oh, yeah.
Chicago. Now you're married.
Now we're married, two kids. I got
and
a son.
And they little, too.
Yeah,
now.
They're little. They're like five and
I just
four.
Moved with a 4 and a 2-year-old, so I know moving is crazy.
Yeah. And I remember looking at houses, and my agent and my financial advisor were like, look, man, we don't even know how long you're going to be there. It's not a great idea. You got a house here in Arizona. Your life is here. You know, of course, my wife was like, well, my family is here. My husband's over there. I need to be with him. And so it was that was a hard part in convincing her of, hey, you got to stay here in Arizona while I'm in Seattle. And it was like, what? Like, hold on. Like, why do I need to be here? And why are you there? And so it was just this whole dynamic of getting her to understand that I could be released. And now if I get released, you're trying to sell a house. You're trying to do this with kids while I'm end up wherever I ended up. So after a lot of arguing and a lot of frustrating nights, it was like, okay, this is what we need to do. And I'm glad we came to that decision, because I did get released from Seattle, and then I got picked up in New York. So now I went from Seattle to New York, and now I'm with the Giants, and this is that epic year when we go to the Super Bowl, and I get a Super Bowl on my last year, which I had never won a championship in high school. Barely went to the playoffs. College, we went to bowl games, but nothing significant. So I was always on good teams, but never really won that ultimate goal of a championship. You know, here I am in my ninth season. I'm in New York. Do I think we're going to get it done? Hell no. I had no clue that we were going to win a Super Bowl. You know, we got there and it just went on this amazing run. And to be able to cap out my career with a Super Bowl championship, it was just like,
really?
Wow, like this is pretty impressive. Like from where I started of being cut to now I'm on a championship team and I'm hoisting this trophy. My family's out here to see this. I have this ring. I'm part of history now. You know, it was just a great feeling.
Right. And one of the greatest Super Bowls of all
time. Yeah, absolutely. Really. You asked me, it was the best ever.
Me too. I still think it's the best Super Bowl of all time. So, like, how many years was it in Seattle?
Just one.
Just 1 year.
Yeah.
So that was the wise decision to keep the family in Arizona.
Yeah.
You had that 1 year. And now that I have this new understanding of just, like, every season could be the final season, did you carry that feeling over into the New York years? Were you feeling like at any point during that run that you cannot make it the whole way with the team? Even when you entered the playoffs, was that a feeling in the playoffs where, like, hey, they could cut me here? Okay. Does that happen?
Well, I'm going to give you a little bit of business of football on that one. Once you become vested, which is anything after 4 years, once you make opening day roster, so the first regular season game, when they kick that ball off, you'll see a lot of veterans. Well, you won't see it, but a lot of veterans who aren't the superstars or starters on the team, once that ball is kicked off, it's like, whew. Because now I'm on the team, I'm here. If I get cut, you have to pay me for the entire season. And if I get picked up, I get the double dip. So once you're vested, which is at least 4 years, you now, once you make the team, then if they cut you, you get paid for the entire season. So now that pressure, that fear, is kind of toned down just a little bit because you know, even if I get cut, I still get paid for this entire season and somebody else might pick me up so I get the double dip.
Okay.
So at that point, it was like the fear of being cut wasn't as afraid of it as I was in the very beginning because I didn't have any money saved up. I didn't know what to do. I didn't understand the game. Now, you know, I'm an 8-year, 9-year vet, so I get it. I understand the nuances of football. So it wasn't as stressful. And then once you've been through, it's like anything else. Once you've been through a bad situation and you come out the back end, you're like, you know, it wasn't as bad as I thought. My worst fears did not come true. Okay. Absolutely, yeah. I really appreciate you coming on, Omar, man. I had a really great time sitting here talking with you, brother.
It's good talking about stuff like this, especially because a lot of people don't even understand some of those pressures that you go through off the field and how they carry to you being on the field, too, and how that affects your gameplay, too.
Yeah, it does. Thanks for tuning in to The Route. Don't forget to subscribe and connect with us on socials for exclusive updates. We'll see you next week.